Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier, podcasting from the SecureSet Academy campus here in Colorado Springs. Today it is my distinct pleasure to welcome Travis Barlow to our show. He's the Vice President, Global Advanced Security Services at GoSecure, and has a multitude of other interests. One that kind of catches my attention is that he's an addicted hunter, a security hunter, and that is definitely a growing area. Look forward to chatting with you, and welcome to the show, Travis.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So tell us, Travis, you're coming to us from the East Coast. Where are you at this exact moment?
Beautiful Halifax, Nova Scotia, sitting on my boat out in the harbor. My other office.
Must be hard work, huh? sitting on the boat. But Halifax, Nova Scotia. So we were just talking briefly before the show about some amazing things that are actually happening up there in Nova Scotia, and you're getting to see some of this?
Well, certainly. It's really heating up here, and I don't just mean the summer temperatures, obviously. However, you know, I've been here for approximately 21 years now in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and I can tell you that initially, especially on the cybersecurity front, there was not much here. I was one of the first, I believe, CISSPs in the region. I was number three, I think, in the Atlantic region.
Wow.
And there was no startup community. There was no community at all. And, you know, we started, approximately 8 years ago, we started the Atlantic Security Conference. We founded that AltSecCon. And this year we had about 702 attendees from around the world. And in conjunction with that, we've actually had some folks move that spoke at the conference over the years. One gentleman relocated here recently from Argentina to start a security company here. BYOS, a new startup here for consumer security, which is really exciting. We've seen multiple other security companies locate resources here, research centers and so forth, and dev shops, nearshoring, if you will. And further to that point, we've seen many new startups that are coming to the market here and starting here. Of course, that's assisted by provincial government-backed initiatives for investment. They just announced a new $16.5 million investment fund, I believe, for startups. And furthermore, they've also there's local incubators such as Nova Corp and Volta Labs. So there's quite a bit of traction here right now, and like anywhere else, if you are doing anything around cybersecurity, it's a pretty exciting spot to be.
Sure enough. And you kind of mentioned, is it in Canada, is it your Ministry of Defense that kind of would be equivalent to our DOD?
So it would be the Department of Defense here.
Okay,
and, so same. Mm-hmm. They've actually gotten more and more involved in the cybersecurity arena, if you will. They actually have different initiatives you can become involved in, and for instance, they'll commit to buying $1 million worth, or $1 million or $10 million, I believe, worth of whatever your solution is, to be your first trial, if you will, your first client. So it's they're really getting on the bandwagon for security and anything innovative here.
Excellent. I had a lot of great opportunity to work with your folks on the Pacific side at Esquimalt there, at your naval headquarters there, in our discipline years and years ago. Wasn't much going on in those days, but we've definitely expanded. So Travis, how did you arrive at cybersecurity? What piqued your interest? What pulled you in?
In the security?
Yeah.
I was always interested. That's the thing. Cybersecurity was always interesting, but I remember when I first looked into it, if you will. At the time, there was really only one security manual or textbook out there, and that was the Unix Administrator's Guide to Security, the Bible of Security, or what have you. And I think that's still in print, actually. I don't know what version, but that was really all that was available. There wasn't much on the internet. And being based in Halifax, Nova Scotia, there wasn't exactly a vivid or vibrant community to learn from others and to network with. So, I mean, it was a bit of a hard slog from the beginning, you know, I got in at the right time. The challenges around cybersecurity really what attracted me to it at the time. And, you know, it's just a different way of looking at things. I guess it helps if you have a good level of paranoia as a human being. And you apply that to something like cybersecurity, it plays well, you know. It's a good fit.
Indeed. Let's take a quick break for our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hello, we're back with New Cyber Frontier, podcasting from SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs. I'm Abe Thompson, your host, who we have the privilege of having on, Mr. Travis Barlow, Vice President of Global Advanced Security Services at GoSecure. He's coming to us from Nova Scotia, Canada. You know, you talked about kind of getting your start in cybersecurity and how hard it was. And one of the phrases that I love to use, and I've coined our regular host here on the show is one of these. He is a pioneer in cybersecurity, and it sounds like your experiences, you're definitely a Canadian pioneer in cybersecurity, particularly on the Atlantic side and in that region. Talk more about your experience as you know, kind of getting that rolling.
Well, it's interesting, you know. I mean, I'm probably the only person that almost got fired twice for talking security. you know, it was rather interesting. I was pulled out of a meeting one day and said, "No, don't talk to the client about security. We got to get this project done on time."
Wow.
And then it happened again a couple of days later, and I didn't give a chance to fire me. I resigned and left. This was years ago. This would have been back early 2000s, and I guess, you know, that really got me going on security.
Sure.
And the next big thing that got me going, I guess, would be that I was rather fortunate. I kind of kept talking about security when nobody else was, and then when something finally happened in the local region, there was a position that came up. All of a sudden, it was security, and they came to me, and I started at this organization. And what became really interesting was they had a nice budget for me for training at the time, which I thought was nice anyway, because I had never had a training budget in a while.
Sure.
And it was about $2,500 Canadian, so that's about, what, $15 US right now. I'm kidding. you know, I was pretty excited, and then I went to my first, I believe it was a DEF CON. Mm-hmm. I flew down to, it was either a DEF CON or a Black Hat, maybe it was an RSA. I don't recall which one it was, but I went, and when I came back, I realized $2,500, it was an additional $8,000 by the time I made it back. It was a good trip, let's say that.
Wow.
But I started asking around, and I realized nobody had a training budget up here. And so again, what I did was I said, okay, let's start a security conference. I did it on a bit of a dare. Just to try to build up the community, because it would be, at the time, I was kind of lonely. I had no way to have a beer and talk security with.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lonely area for that. So we started a conference. I got some like-minded people together that were not in security, but I figured, what the heck? Formed a nonprofit. I bankrolled the thing on a prayer and a line of credit. And like I said, this last year, we had 702 attendees. We offer low-cost education. We bring in some of the best speakers from around the world. Every year, you know, it's one of our, I guess, one of our most one of the accomplishments we're most proud of as a group. And since I've done that, we have security professionals popping up everywhere in Atlantic Canada. And I mean, I'm not saying security on their titles; they're actually trained, they're educated, and we've created this little hub, if you will, of high security interest. And from that, now we're starting to see spin-offs. And different startups around security. And additionally, a lot of those companies that have come and sponsored our conference, they've seen the value of the resources around here, all the universities, and they've said, okay, let's set up an office there and near shore. So, I mean, that's somewhat pioneering, I guess you would say.
Indeed. Well,
it's been a fun emotional roller coaster ride so far. I'm looking forward to year 9 of the conference next year.
Well-deserved congratulations on that. And, you know, you hit on something near and dear to my heart, what we recognize not only in Colorado Springs and Colorado, but I think the cybersecurity world now is the criticality of community. You know, and you know, you mentioned that almost in sort of a melancholy way about, you know, being alone and whatnot and not having someone like-minded to sort of kibbutz with. And that is truly a reality. And what I love about the community events that we do here at SecureSet and other places that I see is giving community to people where there was none, you know, where they didn't have community. And so there is so much that we have to offer. We're so critical to industry in this cybersecurity discipline that community is definitely a great front door. You know, as we kind of look more at your experience and kind of what drew you in, what were the education challenges for you early on?
I guess, like, again, that was early 2000. There wasn't a lot available on the internet. It amazes me today how lucky a lot of new people to the industry, or people that want to get to the industry, are, because there's so many sources of good information and education online that is very reasonably priced. Sure. There was nothing when I was getting involved. I mean, you could go on forums and so forth, but, you know, there just wasn't a lot of good knowledge there. There wasn't a lot of good education. If you wanted to spend $6,000 to $12,000, you could do a week or 2 week boot camp, but you know, that was the biggest challenge, the lack of educational material and the cost of what there was. You know, so there was that. There was today they call it imposter syndrome, I guess.
Yeah.
You would say.
Yeah.
I call it self-doubt, and we all have that, especially when we're new to an industry.
Right.
Being young at the time, I was young, and I was sitting at tables trying to talk security to C-levels and executive, and that was a challenge. But you know, you persevere and you get older. Don't
yeah.
we all?
Yeah. Well, and
so, I mean,
I was going to say, I see the same exact thing with self-doubt, and that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is convincing people they can actually do this. You know, there are education models out there. It's not as daunting and scary as it seems. You don't have to become a master cryptographer to understand encryption. You know, you don't have to, you know, be a math wizard to do all this. I mean, certainly those things come in handy.
Certainly. You know, and it took a long time. I mean, even in this region, I've been based here, like I said, for 21 years. Most of my work historically has been outside of the Atlantic region.
Sure.
For a number of reasons. Number one, again, in Atlantic Canada, there was always the mentality of, why do we need IT security? This went on for years. You know, we're in Atlantic Canada, nobody knows who we are, sort of deal. And obviously that's changed. But there was that. And then there was the fact that, you know, it took literally, I'm going to say 15 years before I was able to develop enough of a reputation in the region to start doing well here from a business point of view. So I think a lot of that comes down to the timing, cybersecurity taking a front row seat. Everybody's concerned about what's happening, and they're worried about themselves, the risks. So I think that's a lot of it for me. But I'm confident that if I started my career in maybe another region, somewhere in Canada like Toronto or Ottawa or somewhere in the U.S., it might have went a bit quicker, if you will.
Well, certainly
some of those challenges that are faced here.
Well, and I certainly think so many will be glad, though, that you started where you did, because, you know, you had a niche, and you probably started a fire that was needed, and certainly something to be proud of, for sure. You know, there are certainly things missing still in our industry, and things that kind of get in our craw a bit. And you and I talked a little bit about this, but what do you see on the horizon as our major, either insurmountable or surmountable challenges in cybersecurity that you want to get fixed?
I think our biggest challenge is mindset. And when I say mindset, I'm still seeing it. I had hopes about 5 years ago. I thought I was seeing a shift, if you will, in regards to buying habits. Unfortunately, we're right back where we were 5 or 6 years ago and before, where everybody's spending their money on tools, fancy gadgets, nice dashboard, metrics, analytics. This is all you hear. end of the day, and I say this quite a bit, so if any of my followers on Twitter or anything might have heard me say this, or anybody that ever has a beer with me, security is three things, and it's sweat, blood, and tears.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. I love it. It's the best experience you'll ever have, but it is sweat, blood, and tears. What I mean by that is, to do it right, you're gonna sweat. Some days you're gonna feel like crying, and some days you might even bleed for it. And it's not tools anymore. And I'm not seeing a lot of innovation on the tool side. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of good things happening. There's a lot of minor advancements, but there's still no silver bullet, and there never will be a silver bullet for this. I fear that a lot of people that are making purchase decisions are swayed by analysis and so forth. And there's a lot of great analysis of products out there. Don't get me wrong. However. A lot of times, when it comes down to marketing and so forth, people forget that if I have the product, it's great, but who's driving that product?
Right.
It's like having a motor without gasoline, if you will.
Sure, and who's going to support that product tomorrow? What's the support chain going to be?
Is it going to be around? Who's going to support that? And are they just going to support that product? For instance, if you're building a threat hunting team, threat hunting is not about one product. Threat hunting is about having a wide, deep understanding of multiple tool sets.
Yep.
And applying the correct tool set to the time and the problem.
And I imagine you'd probably
and that's what threat hunting is.
I'd imagine you'd probably want to say the correct principles, undergirding all that, as opposed to, like you said, vendor specific tools and whatnot. Let's take a quick break for our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, we're back with the new Cyber Frontier. My name is Abe Thompson. I'm your host here from the SecureSet Academy campus here in Colorado Springs. We have as our guest Mr. Travis Barlow, who's got a passion for a number of things. You were just sharing with us, your passion to see some things restored. One of those is innovation. And, you're hoping that people move away from this reliance on a specific tool set and really and recognize that there's no panacea, that we're always gonna need to innovate. Tell us more about your heart there.
So, it's not just about innovation. It's about process, procedures, and people. So it's the three P's, if you will, the way I see it. And you can add in a fourth, you can add in the passion. It's been an interesting experience over the last 4 years for me as I developed and evolved and built a threat hunting team. And, I don't know if I'd be able to sit there all day and do what a lot of my people do. They have a passion for figuring things out. And in cybersecurity, that's one thing you must have all the time. That deep hunger, that unrelenting need to know. And I can tell you, the people that are like that, they're the people that make the best threat hunters out there.
Great.
Time and time again.
I hear the word passion thrown around a lot in our industry in particular, and it's so weird. You hear this cyber geek, like myself, will stand up there and say, hey, I have a passion, right? But then the first question that comes to mind, and you seem to fit on this a bit, is, well, what does that look like in flesh and blood? And you've kind of depicted some of the things that your people do. What does that look like? What does real passion look like in flesh and blood for Travis Barlow?
Real passion, what it looks like in flesh and blood. It's funny because I've had clients come in and they spend days with my team, and then afterwards I take them out for a bite to eat or what have you, and they always say the same thing. It's not what I expected. And my response to that is, what do you mean? And they said, well, your team is not what I expected. And I said, well, how so? And they said, well, don't get us wrong. They're great at what they do. However, we kind of expected them to be different. And I said, so you're saying you expect them to be 40-year-old guys like me with a pot belly? because I'm sitting in front of the computer too much? And they said, yeah, kind of. Kind of, that's what we thought. You got to be a bunch of guys like you, your age. And I said, well, guys my age, you know, they're not always quick enough to do all this continuously. And so, I mean, what does it look like typically for threat hunting? I think it's a younger sort, you know, younger than me anyway, so in the, up to their mid-30s. I mean, you can threat hunt at any age, don't get me wrong, but, you know, in regards to cybersecurity, in regards to passion, what it looks like, you know, it's people that they're at the events. They're not at the events just to get drunk. They're at the events to learn. They network. And that's something I'll say to anybody in cybersecurity. If you're not where you want to be in your career, start networking.
Sure.
Because that's one key thing you can do. Network. Talk to everybody. Be friendly. Shake hands. Make those connections. And you'll be amazed how far that will take you. You know, but passion, I guess, you know, is how much time do you put in? I've never known somebody in cybersecurity to work 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and be where they want to be, or be known for what they want to be known.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as 9 to 5 in cybersecurity, and I'll stand by that comment.
Yeah, and I think that most will stand with you that are realistic about the approach. You know, as I think about what you've said, and I sit in that camp of definitely well beyond the age of some of the folks you're talking about, one thing that I do reflect on is that in our younger years, passion is there, and we're you know, we're nose to the grindstone, and it's not really grindstone, it's nose to our passion. We're doing what we love intensively. But as we get to kind of where you and I are, that passion then has the opportunity to give way to wisdom. And so there's still a place for us in the industry because we've lived through the passion, we've found our passions, we've fought for them, we've established them, and now we have also added so, you know, these number of years that now can be converted into wisdom for the next generation, you know, and so that it gives us some peace, as I'm sure it has for you, to kind of pass some of that work on to the next generation, you know, so that you can still be peering at the horizon. You sound to me definitely like somebody who's looking at the horizon.
I'm in total agreement, and for me, it's you know, I spend a lot of time mentoring people and trying to help people out, put them in the right direction.
Sure.
And I'd say at any given time, I'm probably mentoring about 10 to 12 people. It's very time consuming, but I rotate through them so quickly. They come out of school, they ask to work with me, and we just go and they get jobs. And lately, I find I've been getting a lot of requests to help people that are, you know, probably 10 years into their career in IT security, cybersecurity, sure. And they're trying to figure out where they want to go to within the field. And what makes sense and how to get there. So I've been spending quite a bit of my efforts around that as well lately. And, you know, it's great to be able to help somebody. I think there's a saying about being in the service of others.
Yeah.
And I don't know the exact saying, but I like helping people. And, I mean, that comes back to that community, right?
Absolutely.
Helping everybody you can. And I think sometimes in cybersecurity, we get kind of full of ourselves some days, potentially, you know, and we forget that. And we got to be cautious of that at all times. With success comes great responsibility.
There are these budding minds that have this aching desire to learn, and if we don't pause a bit to pour into them and inspire them to look up from the minutia, yeah, we're being selfish. Honestly, we're not sharing the indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. Another thing that you and I kind of talked about, you have a great concern for how a lot of the conferences are going. You know, the big ones like the RSA, et cetera, et cetera. What's missing? What can they do to improve? I mean, if they're listening, what inspiration can you give some of the conferences that you feel may run the risk of just being old hat as opposed to black hat or whatever else?
Well, certainly. I mean, the longer anything's around, it's viewed differently, obviously. As somebody that founded a conference and runs a conference with a great group of guys at my side to help take care of things, I can tell you it's a double-edged sword. And the double-edged sword, or the sword, if you want, is on one side, you need sponsors to help finance it, to keep your price low for your attendees. On the other side, you don't want it to be the whole conference to be commercialized like a sales pitch.
Yeah.
And it's a constant, let's say teeter-totter that you're up against. It's very hard to balance that out. And I don't know, I just... Some of these events get so big, and I think that's the key. The bigger an event gets, the more challenging it is to find that healthy balance, or the perception of a healthy balance, if you will, between the commercialized side of it and the education and, I guess, root of cybersecurity.
Sure.
I don't have a plan. I don't have a silver bullet for that one either.
Sure.
Listen to your attendees. Take that feedback to heart. That's what we do. Anytime we're pretty well open with our conference, anybody has an idea for the following year, we put it in play. If it makes sense, we put it in play. And you know what? It's funny because just finished our eighth year. Every year, we probably tweak anywhere from 10 to 12 things that people recommend it. And then every year, there's still 10 or 12 things that come up that, oh, we could have done that better. We could have made this a tiny bit more adaptable or what have you. And it's a constant evolution. I think a lot of conferences, when they get to a certain size, they forget they need to continue to evolve, even if it's small bits of evolution, if you will.
Sure.
Right? So I guess that's my only advice. Listen to what people are saying and take the good points. Don't focus on any negative feedback necessarily. If it's really negative, just move on and do your best. Evolve. Continue to evolve.
Well, it sounds like you're calling individuals in our industry as well to do the same. I love your quote on Twitter where you say, threat hunting is a mindset, not a tool. And so from an individual professional perspective, how do we get there? How do we move out of this tool addiction into the mindset of innovation and what's next and staying relevant?
Well, you know, I guess that comes down to raising the awareness level. And it's come so far in such a short time when we look at it. I've seen massive improvements in, knowledge and awareness of cybersecurity risks, especially at the practitioner level.
Sure.
Whether you're a security practitioner or even if you're a system administrator, there's definitely more knowledge and more awareness. People
yeah.
are cognizant that these things are happening. At the executive level, at the board level, why I believe they're cognizant of the risk, again, they're not educated at a high enough level in regards to the options for cybersecurity. They're not aware of this. And when they do sit down to learn about this, they're sitting down with maybe not the best people that have a different interest in the whole equation. Somebody that wants to sell them something. And, I guess we can always use the term, we're all in sales at some point, and we are to an extent, but I think it's important. I'd like to see a gap bridge between the practitioners out there and, of course, the decision makers people making the decisions at the top in regards to what risks they're going to accept, what they're not going to accept, in a non-sales form, if you will.
Okay.
And you see a lot of these executive events and so forth, but it's all for sales. So, I mean, to do this, I don't know what the business model would look like, but I think there's room for something like that out there right now, and I think that's one thing that's missing.
Well, and not everything can be sold, you know, and yet there are still, obviously, you know, we've got to make a living, et cetera, et cetera. And so there are other ways to kind of move forward without just always being in that make-a-buck mentality. A question I have for you may be related to that in terms of Canada. Just think about your citizens across all the provinces. Do they, in cybersecurity, those that understand it anyway, do they see it as a defense of the Canadian way of life industry, or is it still segmented in terms of their view?
I believe it's still segmented. Mm-hmm. It's definitely segmented.
Sure.
For sure.
Because what I see is, across the board, we want to protect the principles of freedom and ensure free market and the ability of these things to move forward. And I do believe there are many that understand it's not just about a buck. You know, we're not going to protect our way of life and our ability to be capitalists and our ability to have funds that we can help others and be charitable. We're not going to be able to do that if we've left open holes and we're not defending that uniformly as an industry.
I'm in total agreement with you on that.
Yeah.
I don't know if Canada is where they're yet as a whole. I think there's a lot of people that think like that. However, I think it's still fragmented.
Sure. Yeah.
Or segmented, if you want.
Yeah, fragmented, segmented. I mean, probably maybe similar connotations. So what has been probably the biggest draw from some of your conferences that you had? What was probably one of the most profound topics?
Well, of course, they follow the waves of the threat landscape, if you will.
Good.
And whatever's hot at the time, of course. But right now, we're seeing a big interest in secure self-identity. And having something provided by different governments, and that seems to be a big pull for a lot of our attendees in the last year or two. A lot of people are asking about it. Of course, the latest threats are always popular. We're seeing a big movement towards more experience with pen tests and so forth. Lots of people are asking those questions, and we're seeing, I guess right now I can tell you that in this region anyhow, I'm seeing a lot of just infrastructure practitioners and so forth. And that's a chopper going overhead, by the way, a military chopper right now, so I do apologize if you hear the rotors. However, a lot of infrastructure practitioners are actually up in the ante, and they're trying to get more into the defensive measures.
Sure.
In regards to learning pen tests, and of course offensive security is a big one. I keep hearing about the OSCP and so forth, their certification.
Sure. Well, and of course, you know, I'm sure Canada has just as many, if not more, relationships with European business, and GDPR has turned everything up on its end, so that's going to keep folks busy. Ladies and gentlemen, I've had our guest Travis Barlow, the Vice President of Global Advanced Security at GoSecure. He's obviously a pioneer in cybersecurity, not just in Canada, but among all of us here. It's been a privilege to talk to you. You got the Atlantic Security Conference going. And for those of you out there that might be interested listening, it's ATLSECCon. So ATLSECCon.com. That's AtlanticSecurityConference.com. If you want to join this movement and hear more about what Travis has to say. But Travis, I really thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Indeed. And you have a great day out there on the boat, and don't get lost, eh?
Thank you very much, eh? Take care.
Indeed. Take care, Travis.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
Enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.